Today on Snail Trail 4x4, California destroys Texas in ham radio stats.
Snail Trail 4x4 is brought to you by Bestline Racing. Bestline Racing has a complete lineup of performance additives for your engine's needs. From our oil additives to our fuel treatments, we have you covered for your hobby, tow rig, race car, or your daily driver. Check the show notes for your Snail Trail 4x4 discount at bestlineracing.com.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast. If you like going off-roading in Toyotas, wrenching on Toyotas, camping in Toyotas, and maybe even poking a little bit of fun at Toyotas, and of course, hearing about how awesome zip ties pair with Toyotas, then this is the podcast for you. That's right, ladies and germs. I have my awesome co-host over... Way away from me, because I'm still a bubble boy, and he's nodding his head whenever we talk about zip ties and Toyotas. So, Jimmy, Mr. James Hydrojet in the other Heezy. James, how are you?
Doing good. I'm doing well. My quarantine status time is completed, and nobody that we that might have come into conflict has had any symptoms, including the elderly people. So they never went and got tested. So, and then nobody ever really got sick. So we're just sort of writing it off on our end. It would be a miracle if all like five or six of us were asymptomatic.
Yeah, that's not how statistics works generally.
No. So, cool. We're doing good on our end.
That's good.
You have an update for us on your end?
Yeah, pretty much. Gear Wrench Corey is not feeling too well. He said he just lost taste and smell yesterday. And I was like, that's so weird to me. Like, I can't imagine not being able to taste food or smell things. So yeah. I'm like, I kind of want to get it just so I can experience that, because that just seems so weird and off the wall to me. But anyway, so he's doing okay. He's hanging in there. He definitely tested positive. So the secretary and I went and got tested on Saturday, and we're now recording on Tuesday here. So it's been a week since I was kind of exposed. Are possibly exposed, and I'm asymptomatic. I don't have any symptoms going on, but the secretary got her test results back, and they came back negative. So I would imagine if she's negative, mine are going to end up being negative too. I'm just still waiting for my official results. But yeah, we're doing great here and hanging out and just kind of doing our own thing and staying away from people and making a lot of use of video calls.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you guys are doing well. I did talk to Gear Wrench Corey, and he's in high spirits. He said it feels like pretty bad flu. He's not too bad. He said his daughter was the next one that's sick, and she's just sort of fatigued. Okay. His wife is over it for the most part, and their young son either is not affected or does not have it and is running havoc and driving everybody nuts.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So our thoughts and prayers go out to Corey. Hope he does well. Hope he gets over it here soon, and so we can hang out and start working on his 4Runner.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited to kind of get that up and running now that Kermit is almost completely done. I'm going to need some other projects to work on and start tinkering with.
Oh, I've got a big one in the shop if you got time to kill.
That's what she said. So, yeah. Yeah, should be good. I think that, winter is coming around. My work, my day job slows down quite a bit during winter, but Morflate picked up a ton. So, we'll see. It takes time to get up to the Snail Trail shop each day, but,
You did move farther away.
I know. I know. That is true. So, Cool. Yeah. Let's get into the episode today. We have, let's see. It is a Thursday episode. This is episode 153. And we're getting the hang of this remote, podcasting thing. It's a little weird, but, you know, hey, we're doing what we can do to keep getting you guys some entertainment value out there. We had, let's see here, we had a lot of good feedback from the past few episodes. I was really interested to hear people's take on the remote podcasts. And there's pretty good feedback on it. I didn't hear too many negative stuff. So I'm glad that it's working out. I'm glad that the good old fun board here is working out and doing a good job for the Bubble Boy. What is it, the Bubble Boy episodes of of Snail Trail 4x4?
Yeah. I also, I think, pairing along with that, I'd like to give a big thanks to all the fans that have reached out to us and made, you know, asking if we're okay and asking how things are going and, you know, checking in and seeing what's going on with us. You know, I do appreciate it. You know, it does show that people are actually listening to what we say. You know, and cheers to you guys. I'm having my morning coffee. We're recording this in the morning and appreciate checking in and following up. It's nice to know that somebody out there cares about me.
Yeah. I don't care about you too much. So I'm glad to hear that the listeners care about you.
Right.
Yeah. Did you see, Brian Murphy's, Bubble Boy media shot, the picture he made?
On Instagram or on Facebook?
On Facebook, on
Patron group.
Yeah.
I don't remember it. Yeah. The joy is here. I'm actually at a computer since we're recording this. I'll pull it up right now.
There you go. He didn't disappoint. We'll put it that way.
Oh, good. Maybe the next box?
Yeah. Possibly. No, I don't know. We'll see. I
just started Facebook and had a pretty good memory pop up. Oh, nice. I like it. It's pretty much it's the box. It's the picture of the rock landing lifestyle with Kermit and Bobcat on the rocks, but then he put us in a snow globe.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty good. So thank you, Brian. That worked out great. We'll have to make a t-shirt out of that, or maybe we'll make a beanie out of it. So for the wintertime snow globe.
Oh, that reminds me, some new merch possibly coming in for Snail Armor, Snail Trail, and Morflate. We've had some good talks with, Dirtbag Johnny.
Yeah, and, buddy.
You know, the good friend over from Wheeling Wine and Whiskey. And we're probably going to tag on to some of the things that Wheeling Wine and Whiskey was planning on doing. We're like piggybacking on them.
Yeah.
They don't even know it yet, I don't think. And, but the benefit of that is we're able to, you know, go from like 200 orders and we're raising the bar to like 1400 orders. And so we'll get a slight discount on, some overall pricing, but that is only going to come back and, you know, be there for you guys. It will get a slightly discounted price for, you know, help Wheeling Wine and Whiskey out on that aspect, but we'll be having some additional merch for everybody else out there that might be interested in it. And updates on that probably will be later. Let's make sure it's all finalized first.
Yeah. It's going to be really cool. I'm excited. It's been a couple of the things that we're doing are stuff that we've been wanting to do for a while. For Snail Trail 4x4, but we just didn't know of any good way to do it. And as Wheeling Wine and Whiskey found out, it's apparently there's a lot of bad versions of these out there. So
yeah,
we waited until they got the problem figured out. Now we're like, yay, let's do it.
Yeah, we let them be a guinea pig for once.
Exactly.
Instead of them going piggybacking off of us.
Exactly. So, thanks guys. that's a teaser. So if you guys are following along to both podcasts out there, you should be able to figure out what's going on that front. But, I think that's going to start opening things up to a few more, other stuff going on. So we'll leave it at that. The treasure hunt has made a little bit of headway. So there was just a couple of small issues with the laser engraving, with the grains of the wood and getting it nice and clean with the burn and the etching on the pucks that we're going to be using. So yeah. Once we get that figured out, we should be able to launch the treasure hunt, which will mean some changes coming to the Patreon account once we do that. So be on the lookout. I know we've been talking about it for a while here, but it looks like it's finally coming to a head here on being able to get that up and running.
Yeah, and I don't think we're in too much of a rush now that winter's here. I think our idea was to kind of, you know, put things on the ground and put them under a rock or something along those lines. But mm-hmm. now that winter's here, snow covering, we don't have, you know, we'll have to either get creative in how we hide these things on like hanging them from a tree or like an ornament or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think we're in as big as a rush as we were trying to get them out before the snow hit now yeah. that the snow is here. So I think the big major push for the treasure hunt will be once spring comes around.
I don't know, man. I'm totally down to go out into the snow and hang them up on every tree in the forest.
Yeah. I'm not opposed to it at all, but I think that there's more options, I think. Well, I mean, there's millions of options of hanging them on trees, but, mm-hmm. You know, if all you're doing is hanging it on a tree, then that's the only way that somebody's going to find it. But as soon as we can hide it in caves or rocks or crevices or, you know,
crevasses,
you know, then our options become much higher of where we can hide them and how. So, mm-hmm. Anyways, in regards to that, it's still in the works. We're going to definitely do this. But at this point, we're just making sure that it's right. Cause we're not going to rush it.
Yeah. I agree.
High five.
So, you're getting close to cracking a laugh over there. So, all right. So that's cool. Let's see. What else do we got going on? We have the Patreon giveaway for the month of December. So that is the Vyaire 400H compressor. That's the hard mount compressor, 2.3 CFM. And we have officially launched the Vyaire 400 compressor on the Morflate website as well. So we have the 400P
congratulations
up on the website that launched a couple days ago. We have the 88P available on the website, and we're going to be launching Power Tank here, I think, by the end of the week. So I've been talking with Steve and Tyler over there at Power Tank about some other stuff too, and which we might get into a little bit later, but that should, I think, be up and live on the website. So you'll be able to buy Power Tanks or Vyaire compressors through Morflate as well when you order your four-tire inflation deflation kits. So in order to celebrate that, Morflate is donated a Vyaire 400H compressor to give away for the Snail Trail Patreon giveaway for the month of December. So
awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Morflate.
Yeah, thank you, Morflate. And so make sure you guys are signed up over at patreon.com/snailtrail4x4 by the end of the month, by the end of the year. If you're not signed up by the end of the year, you won't get in for it.
Wah, wah.
Wah, wah, wah.
We have one for that, too.
We do. I got to find it. Here it is. very cool. We are, let's see, this is about the middle of the month now. So we've already done the birthdays. Happy birthday to all the Snail Trail birthdays out there, which does not include Jamie, just FYI. James, he's in January, not December, remember?
Yes.
Good job.
I was like, where are you going with this?
Let's see. I have some updates about ham radio stuff. If you don't have anything to go through,
I got a little stuff, but I mean, okay. you can geek out for a moment if you want first.
I love geeking out over ham stuff. So, I was going through, and there was a couple of comments made by Wheeling Wine and Whiskey about how ham radio got decimated this year, and that, you know, there's nobody taking tests, no licenses going out this year, which is 100% not true. Sorry, guys. But I was as I was going through and trying to figure out the stats of what the licenses are actually up to this year, I found out some really interesting other stuff. So I was wanted to go run through those just because I thought they were fun little tidbits.
Okay.
I found the licenses per state as of...
You're not going to go through every state, are you?
No, I'm just going to go through the top six and their numbers here. So, as of December 14th, 2020, we have the top six states. So as of the whole entire country is, let's see, the entire country is right around 112,000, licenses.
Total or
total,
new?
Total for the entire country. New licenses is about 7,000 this year, roughly. Which is on par for what it normally does. Usually, the country ends up going and increasing about 1%, 1 to 2% each year. So it's just barely under 1%. So I guess it trended downwards, I guess, from previous years, what the increase has been, but still adding, similar to previous years. So, the interesting part is that like 6,000 of those, like 80% of those have come within the past 6 months. So there was a very small, like nobody going and getting licenses at all through January through March and April. And now that pretty much since like May or June, almost all of those licenses have come, into play and people got their license, since then.
Do you think that's because you weren't really allowed out in those first few months and nobody could go and do anything or go and study or, you know, get together? And then as soon as you were released to go have fun and go do something, people wanted, needed a way to communicate with others and, you know, and wanted to solve this issue of being locked indoors and having no way to talk?
Yes, I think that's a good way of putting it. And, there's been a few clubs across the country that have gotten really, really good at doing remote license examinations. So, the FCC has allowed remote examinations since like 2015. But since we've always been able to very easily go and take the tests in person, there hasn't really ever been a high need for remote licenses or remote examinations. And so now that COVID came around, a couple of clubs got really, really good at getting that process down. And remote licenses are now very easy, very simple, very streamlined to get. So I think that just like you said, as people are, you know, getting locked down and then people start going out and recreating more, they're realizing, hey, we need licenses. Getting a ham license would be a great COVID project to deal, and you can do them very easily. It's very attainable now remotely. So I think a lot of people were doing that. I think that people found a need, they adapted, and solved a problem. And I think that's one really cool thing. This is like the thing that I absolutely love about the pandemic is that it's brought about these really cool solutions to problems that we've never really had before as a society. And so seeing people step up and the creativity that people are coming up with, I absolutely love it. I think it's been a really cool outcome of 2020 this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we're all finding new ways to adapt and what to do with like the free time when we have downtime. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, definitely going to get your ham radio or studying to do something, you know, as simple as, you know, like I've talked about it previously, I started Duolingo and started studying Spanish again.
Yeah.
You know, it just, you know, if you're stuck indoors and you can't go outside, because I mean, California is now on another lockdown for the most part. A lot of it is, and or at least where we are. And, you know, this is something that, okay, I'm stuck at home. Now I can, you know, play with the kiddo and then play, you know, with Duolingo. Mm-hmm. And so it's just another thing that you can do. You know, you can study for to get your ham license and then you can now get them online, which is really cool. So I think I'm all about, you know, making yourself a better person and making yourself smarter and wiser. So yeah, I think that it's a good thing to do.
Cool. I like it. I agree. I wanted to go through the top six states and the number of licenses that each state has. So starting, total. So that includes your technician, your amateur, your extras, generals, the advanced, and the novice, and the other licenses that are no longer distributed and given out by the FCC.
Got it. Okay.
So, number six, we have New York at 20.
Yay, New York.
Good job, New York. At 29,000 licenses.
Mm.
Next, we have the Boonies. We're heading over to the Boonies in Ohio.
Wow. Okay.
At 30,000. Next is Washington. So fourth place is Washington with 37,000.
All right. So hold on. Are these new? These are totals.
Total.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Total licenses. Okay. And then next is all the flatlanders in Florida because they have nothing else to do, and they are at 46,000.
Well, and can you imagine how far those radios go and there's no hills in the way?
Yeah, right. A 2-watt radio goes like 100 miles over there.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Miami to Tampa.
Yeah, right. And then next, number two. Number two is Tejas with 58,000 licenses.
Where?
Tejas.
Texas? Got it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess that's another way to say it. So Texas, 58,000. And then any guesses as to the number one state?
Cali.
California. Any guesses as to how many licenses we have?
Oh, geez. A 100,000.
Ooh, that's actually a pretty decent guess. It's higher, but it's 115,000. So we have more licenses in California than number two and three combined.
Wow.
Texas and Florida combined. So 115,000 licenses in California. I think that speaks a lot to the Silicon Valley mainly. We just have a lot of techie and engineerish people in California. And we have such a massive state too. I mean, we are California. I think people underestimate just how big of a geographic area California encompasses. I'll talk to people that are from the East Coast and they're like, yeah, it takes to go. We can go, you know, in a 5-hour drive, we can go across three states or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, 5-hour drive doesn't even get you halfway across California.
Long ways.
Long ways. Yeah. So
yeah, I've done that. I've gone for, I don't know if it was 5 or 8 hours, and you've gone through three states over there on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it would take about five to six hours to drive from like San Francisco to Reno.
Yeah. It's about there.
And that's the short way across the state.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
How long do you think it would take? About 8 to 10 hours to drive to San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And then it takes about 6 hours to drive to Shasta.
Yeah.
And then it's another few hours above that from Shasta to the border.
Mm-hmm.
So it would take like 16 hours to drive from like Mexico to Oregon.
It's about that. That would be my guess, 14 to 16.
If you're going more or less the speed limit.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. We can get to Moab quicker than we can drive from Mexico to Oregon.
Yeah. I drove from Sacramento to Spokane, Washington in one day.
Jeez. How was that day?
It was fun, actually. It was, I was driving with a college mate of mine. We're going up there for a wedding and we pretty much just rotated shifts, and it took us a solid, 20-ish hours, but it was fun. It was just a good old road trip time, so it was good.
You didn't treat it like a cannonball run?
No.
That'd be hard. That'd be difficult to do in California, a cannonball run up the state of California.
Oh, they do it.
I figured people do it, but man, that's probably got to be the hardest state to do a cannonball run through.
Yeah. No, Oregon, I bet would.
You think so?
Well, you're allowed to speed in California.
Oh, I guess that's true.
Well, you go over into Oregon, you have to like slow down to the speed limit.
Gotcha. So I thought that was fun. The ham radio licenses in the state, so by states, I thought that was an interesting, fun little thing. And seeing that, you know, most of the licenses that have been distributed this year have come in the past 6 months, which means that people are adapting and figuring out ways to continue educating themselves and getting licenses and learning about ham radio. I think that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really neat. It's also good to see, and it somewhat makes sense that California is one of the higher ones, right? Because, I mean, we have the infrastructure, mm-hmm. That's the word I was looking for, yeah. Already kind of established here in California with, you know, a lot of new antennas going up, you know, or talking about going up here, especially in the Sierras here, mm-hmm. Where other states don't really have it. You know, it's not made yet. And so, you know, a lot of them were pretty much on CB because they don't have the opportunity to use the repeater systems. They just don't have it. Now, Simplex obviously is, you know, an outstanding option to have. But it's really the benefit of having the repeater that could help save lives and save, you know, your ass when you're in a bad situation. So,
yeah, exactly.
It makes sense.
Yeah. So that's cool. I was having some fun going through all the stats on the ham radio stuff. One thing I did come across, which I'm a little concerned with, is that the FCC is proposing to start a $50 fee to get your ham radio license.
So that's lower?
No, that's way higher. I mean, there's currently no fee.
There's no fee to get your radio license?
Correct. FCC.
You have to pay for the test, though, right?
You have to pay the club for their time and supplies to administer the test.
Oh.
So currently, the FCC has no fee for a license. The clubs usually charge $15 to $20 just for their time to have the testers get there, to volunteers. For all the pencils, and the clubs actually have to order the supplies from the FCC. So all the test booklets, the exam scantrons, or the bubble sheets you have to fill in, they have to order all those and pay for those.
Right. You pay for the people that are there to actually grade the test, because the club's not actually allowed to grade the test.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay. So it's, you know, all your costs associated with getting a ham radio license actually go to just covering costs. There's no actual fee to the FCC for filing a ham license. So anyways, the FCC is now looking at starting, a fee to get ham radio licenses. So I'm pretty sure the ARRL is going to have something to say about that. And so I'm hoping that the ARRL, the American Radio Relay League, is going to step in and do a good job at lobbying to not have that fee go up. So we'll see how that turns out in the future.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, keep us informed, because you're the only one watching it.
Yeah. I don't know. Chris Maines does a pretty good job, too. So we'll have Chris watch as well. He keeps a good eye open for ham radio news out there in the world.
All right.
So
Chris, let us know.
Yeah. Cool. What do you got going on over there?
Not a lot. I've been doing a lot of computer work the past few days. Snail armor is still back ordered, and I'm actually considering ordering a whole nother batch, because I have so many back orders that I'm concerned that as soon as I get this in and I open the doors, it'll almost immediately sell out. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting. I need to figure that out. Besides that, I've been just kind of doing research on the direction I need to go with Samantha. We've had some things kind of fall through on our end that we were sort of planning on, or at least I was planning on. And they just don't seem to be working out at this time. So I'm kind of going with more of a budget build on Samantha, where I was going to go a lot more elaborate.
Gotcha.
And so I have since then I've received in the body lift kit. So I'm going to, eventually we're going to pull out or lower the, I'm not quite sure which one we're probably going to pull the engine and transmission out or lower it down or something. Mm-hmm. Put the body on with the body lift kit. And then we're going to start lifting the transmission up and figuring out where we're going to need to cut away from the body, which I kind of talked about in last Thursday's episode. Mm-hmm. And then, we're going to need to, so I need to gut the inside of the cab of Samantha. And I'm probably going to do that, start working on that tonight. And with prep of on Thursday, Hustle Nuts is coming over and we're going to attempt to put the cab on. So
nice.
We'll see how it goes. Yeah.
I have a feeling
I need an extra hand for sure.
On Thursday, possibly. We'll have to see how my test results come back, if I'm clear or not.
Yes.
Yeah. Otherwise, I can come over in a hazmat suit and try and help out.
Sounds good. We can open the doors and get the wind to go through, and we'll be all right.
Nice. Cool. So, Samantha work this week. That should be fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've kind of been hesitant to working on it because I just haven't had all the answers and haven't figured out which direction I wanted to go. And now I kind of have a better understanding of that. We were talking about it a little bit last time in regards to the cross member. And I think, you know, and I were kind of arguing about if the stock rubber cross member that's there originally, you know, the OEM one will it fit or not? And I was arguing that it might raise the drivetrain more. And you were saying, I think it's really close. And after looking at it and measuring out, I think you're right. I think that it is super close and I can pretty much run a piece of plate across from frame rail to frame rail and throw that, stock mount on there.
Yeah.
And it should be pretty darn close to where it's sitting currently, which is just over being flush because I don't want anything rubbing and I need room for the rock.
Yeah. Yes. Keeping room for rocks underneath you is a good idea, typically.
I meant Dwayne Johnson, but I meant the rotation of the T-case when you apply throttle, you know, because I want that rotation to happen. So I need to, I believe it actually rotates, you know, the output of the front drive shaft is on the passenger side mm-hmm. on my rig.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that goes down when you accelerate. So I need to make sure that it has enough clearance so that if it does rotate down, it's not going to be hitting my, the cross member.
Well, cool. So we got, more Samantha plans. Yeah. I was curious to see about that because I was fairly certain that the output dropped further lower than the mounts. But I wasn't 100% certain. It all obviously depends on how much you're clocked as well.
That'll
be, I think that doing the plate there and having a couple mounts, built into the structure of the plate, is going to give you a really just nice flat, skid plate essentially that you can make as big or as small as you want to make sure you're sliding over things like you're on a little water slide.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, the only other thing I did, I kind of teased it on one of the last episodes, about, grind hard plumbing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the video came out on their end, with what they were doing. And so I cut up Samantha's drive shaft.
Okay.
Because they were applying a two wheel drive transmission onto, I'm going to butcher it. What is it? The 2UZ?
Okay.
Is that the Supra motor?
The Supra motor, the V8 or the 6 in the inline 6?
I think it's the inline 6.
I forget which. I think the UZ is the V8. So I think it would be the JZ.
Maybe it. Well, yeah, it's. I can't remember. Actually, I don't really know what motor they were throwing in. But it was the Supra motor that they were putting it in.
Nice.
And then they were putting a two wheel drive transmission on there. And they didn't have the output shaft that came out of the back of the transmission. So that through friends of friends, they called me up and we got into contact and I sent them Samantha's. I cut it off. And so I made a little tiny video. It's like 2.5 minutes long or 3 minutes long of me cutting up this drive shaft and sending it off to them. And, you know, and then I have their link to the video in the link to their video where they use that part in that down in my video description. So it's kind of cool to, you know, see them, you know, get to talk to them and work with them and, you know, help them build their project, which they're building. It's a tractor, by the way.
Okay.
It's going to be so large. It's definitely a tractor.
Okay.
That they're putting this, you know, a V6 or an inline six or a V8 engine and Toyota two-wheel drive transmission to a Jaguar independent rear suspension setup. And funny fact was, and they found out, was that the U-bolts used in the Toyota drive shaft are the same U-bolts that are used in the Jaguar.
Nice.
Yeah, so it worked out really easy.
Made them up using the U-joints.
Exactly.
Nice. That's cool.
So it was a fun video to make on my end because I took more artistic liberties to the video than I, you know, it's not a how-to video. It's just more a video of me cutting up a drive shaft. But I had fun creating it because it was just different than what I normally do.
Yeah.
And, but it's fun to, they did a good shout out to me. So I appreciate that. Thanks a lot, guys. And it was fun to see them use something that I gave them, you know, in their video, which was pretty fun to see. So.
That's cool. I need to get working on the stupid rust stuff sliders video. It's something happened and I lost like the first half of the project that I was working on. And so I ended up having to scrap the whole thing and restart the whole thing.
Oh, damn.
And ever since that, I was like, I'm done with this stupid video editing thing.
Too much work.
Yeah, screw video editing.
Tell me about it. Sucks.
Yeah, and it does. Nice. So you got you've been playing in the shop a lot during the past week, I think, since I've seen you or even talked to you.
Yeah, a little bit.
And in the computer in the office.
I do have one. Sorry?
I said, and the computer in office.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of photo work and I think I wrote like 2 blogs in the last, you know, and I don't normally write blogs.
Yeah.
So I had some blogs go out, you know, with some of the videos that have been going out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm considering, and hit me up if you, and anybody, if you're interested in this, jimmy@snailtrail4x4.com. I'm considering writing a blog to follow along with the build. So every like video I put out, I'm considering writing a blog about it and sort of talking about why I'm doing what I'm doing because mm-hmm. a lot of the video is here's what we're going to do. Here's some time lapse of us doing it. And here's what the next thing I'm going to do. You know, and I'm talking about what we're doing, but I'm not necessarily talking about how we came to this decision of what we're going to do.
Yeah.
So if anybody's out there is interested in reading that blog or wants to kind of hear my reasoning of why I'm doing things, let me know if that's something you would be interested in following along.
I am interested. There we go. I'm the only one that matters.
There you go. Good to know.
You magnificent bastard. I salute you.
So, nice. Cool. Yeah, I've been, I was bad. I did
were
bad.
You?
Yeah. Sunday, so I'm supposed to be on quarantine, right?
Yeah.
And I decided Sunday that there was a storm rolling through the Sierras. And I can't skip and miss a good storm when Kermit's up and running. So I decided to quarantine in my vehicle and go up.
I think that works.
Go up to the storm. So I think it worked out well. I only had to make one stop. I took all my food and everything with me from home and we made one stop at a gas station, so I got out and Lysoled down the gas pump and then Lysoled it afterwards after I was done using it. I was like, all right, that should be good. And then headed on up to the snow. And we got up there super early. Like we left home at, I don't know, 7 a.m.? We were out of the, we were up and out of there. So we ended up getting up to the trailhead, quote unquote, by like 8:45, almost 9 a.m. maybe. And, didn't air down at all, just kind of kept going up and up. And I was like, all right, at some point, the snow will either get too deep where I'll have to air down, or I'll get to the end where the gate is. And so, yeah, the snow never really got deep at all. And I made it all the way to the gate, and we were at the gate by like 10:15, 10:30 maybe.
Wow. That was fast.
Yeah, and so I was like, oh, well, I wasn't expecting the day to go this quickly. Our goal was to get off of the hill before sundown, and so we kind of had allotted the whole day up until like 3 p.m. or so to get to the gate. So we were all of a sudden 6 hours, 5 hours ahead of schedule.
Right.
But it was neat. We got up there, and as soon as we got to the top, all hell broke loose, and it became stormy very quickly, which was interesting. So,
what elevation were you up to?
We were up right about 7,500 feet at the top end there where the storm was happening. So we had really good wind going through there. It was definitely sub-freezing. I don't know what the temperature was because I don't have an external thermometer on Kermit yet. But it was going so bad and so cold that we couldn't keep the windows defrosted.
Oh, wow.
We had the defroster cranked up at high speed with the AC on to dry out the air, and it wouldn't. The front window would not stay defrosted, so we had to keep wiping down the front window with a towel as we were driving down the hill. But the cool part for me was, Kermit did awesome. The 3.4 engine is beautiful in the snow. I absolutely love it for snow wheeling.
Okay.
And B,
well, that's good.
I got the secretary to drive.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah.
Maybe the assistant, like, talked her into learning a little bit more, so when you guys go to the clinic, she'll have a heads up of what's going on.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll see. She's still not used to manual transmissions and how to operate manual transmission and what that third pedal does exactly.
Yeah.
So I've tried to teach her in the past by explaining how the engine and the wheels are connected on a vehicle, and that third pedal disconnects them. And it didn't work out very well. She's very much like, she just has to do things repetitively over and over and over again to get it and figure it out. So we did it that way this time, and ended up killing the engine and killing the rig a lot. And I was like, no problem. This is not an issue. This is what engines do in manual transmissions. So, before long, we kind of had it all figured out, and it was good. I aired down the tires, the IROCs, down to about 4 PSI, and that way she wouldn't have any issues, any troubles whatsoever, and, she made it down the hill just fine, and we got about halfway down, and she goes, all right, I need a break. I was like, what do you mean you need a break? She goes, I'm tired. This is exhausting. I was like, yeah, off-roading as a driver is tiring. There's so many things you have to kind of keep track of and pay attention to and know where you're going and go where you want to go and don't go where you don't want to go. And so it was funny to me to have her start commenting about how tired she was getting.
Yeah, it is a mental game for sure, you know, to concern yourself with everything that's going on, especially in addition with a manual, right? Mm-hmm. Of having to shift or when to shift and what shift points are you at, you know, and then where are your tires? What track are you in? Where should you be going? Where's the, you know, how do you navigate, you know, the, you know, direction that your vehicle is currently going and where do you need to be going?
Yeah.
You know, there is a lot going on, especially when it snows a little different than rock crawling, where rock crawling, you kind of, I feel like you need to pick your line, you know, you need to know where your tires are at, and you need to have be looking far enough ahead that you know where you're going to need to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, I'm assuming that you were on, for the most part, a road when you were out snow wheeling. So it wasn't, you didn't need to concern yourself so much about where am I currently and where do I need to be. You sort of just stay in this path. But yeah, it's definitely very mentally fatiguing.
Yeah.
To wheel and go off-roading, and you know, and it's I don't think people realize it until they actually jump into that driver's seat and do it.
Yeah, exactly. So it was fun to have her experience that, and she kept saying that you know, she's getting a feel for it, and she goes, I'm starting to feel the transmission and feel the traction of the tires. And oh. I was like, that's really cool, because that's what it's about. You really want to go off of the how the vehicle feels. You know, you and I have talked about it, the doing vehicle yoga or rig yoga and being in tune with your vehicle. So it was cool to see her replying and talking about it in those terms, without me cueing those terms and cueing,
sure.
What are you feeling right now or anything. She just started talking about the feel of the vehicle. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
So. Yeah, that is awesome. I know that when the assistant and I were like out on the con, I would do, you know, I'd slip off a rock or something would happen, you know, or I'd hit a diff or something and I'd be like, okay, was that the front or rear? Or tire fell off the rock, you know? Uh-huh. And I would prompt those a lot when she was driving, and occasionally when it was something odd or obscure, I'd ask her when I was driving. The one thing I think that really helped out a lot with the assistant and when we were wheeling around on the rocks was I told her that she needed, it's important for her to, you know, drive down the trail, but it's might be even more important for her to know where the rear tires are when you're on the trail. Cause, yeah. You know, like, you know, if you need to drive around, you know, a tree, you can't just crank it, you know, and you're going to have the vehicle run into the tree, you know.
Yeah,
and I was trying to really like, you know, when you're at the mall and you're in the parking garage, you need to park, you know, next to one of those concrete posts.
Yeah.
You know, you have to drive around that concrete post to get into the parking spot, you know, and mm-hmm. I was trying to, you know, explain it like that. So I think I don't believe enough emphasis is put on to rear tire placement that I think more emphasis needs to be. I think that needs to be a bigger discussion point on a lot of off-roading.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a good point, especially with longer vehicle wheelbases, longer wheelbased mm-hmm. vehicles. It was funny riding with Samurai James out during the Halloween weekend. Because, you know, he has an 84, 89 inch wheelbase. So, being able to see the turns and how he was maneuvering his rear tires was just a comical to me. Cause I was like, you don't even think about it then. You're just kind of like, oh yeah, you could crank it and turn wherever you want to go.
That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Bobcat's 124 inches. So it's, you know, definitely a lot longer and I need to consider it.
Yeah. Definitely.
I did parallel with this and I don't want, we won't dwell on it too long, because I know you're telling your story. I did have somebody write on my wheelbase video. He said, hey, I know this video is all about rock crawling and talking about what is good wheelbases for rock crawling, but what about general off-roading? You know, and I was like, well, what do you consider general off-roading?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and
there's
I'm in Australia.
Right, okay.
You know? And he's like, and we don't do a lot of rock crawling out here. We just drive down, you know, drive in the bush, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you're okay. So you guys are like the king of overlanding.
Yeah.
And no offense, Chuck Norris.
Yeah.
And, you know, and what you guys do is different than what we do. And, you know, and I started to explain what is a good wheelbase, you know, or kind of how to figure out a good wheelbase for overlanding. And what more or less what I said was, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
For overlanding, you know, but what does matter is your breakover angle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're too long, if you're really long, then you're going to get high centered. If you're narrow, you're not going to get as high centered as much, but you're going to, you know, you're just going to be a steep incline or decline whenever you're going up or down, obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I said, so if you're really long, you need bigger tires. So then you can clear bigger, you know, clear that belly height that you want.
Yeah.
You know, and so
you can clear the rock.
Yeah. So I hope he understands that, you know, a little bit more, but I thought it was interesting to, you know, I'm always so focused on rock crawling.
And, yeah.
You know, cause that's what I do.
Yes.
Right. And it's fun to hear other sides of the story.
There's just different,
perspectives.
Thank you out there of what other people do and how they view the world and view the off-roading world.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I definitely feel like we tend to kind of get lumped into that just every time, the default of talking about rock crawling all the time, when we have a lot of other listeners out there that don't necessarily do rock crawling. Not just because, you know, maybe they don't have the rig for it, but because rock crawling is not really big in their area. They have a lot of mud bogs or a wet terrain or super dry snow, powdery snow.
Right.
So it's different. It's fun to see the different perspectives and the different needs, which is why we did a lot of that, the off-roading 101 series, how to build a rig for rock crawling versus desert running versus overlanding versus mud bogging or whatever you're going to be doing out there. There's different, so many different types of wheeling. And that's one of the things that I absolutely love about this hobby and the industry is, just within itself, there's a ton of different sects.
Absolutely.
Within the industry. So it's pretty cool.
All right. So back to coming down the hill. The secretary's driving. Everything's going well. She's just mentally fatigued.
Yeah.
So from there?
Yeah. So we found a good spot to kind of pull over. It was... it's up on a ridge, pretty much up at the Alder Ridge, up at the top, kind of the top. It's not at the end of the trail, but it's kind of like the one of the higher elevation points of the trail.
Okay.
Up on a ridge, and there's a nice little pull-off area you can go to and just kind of hang out. It's a little bit protected. There's a bunch of tall trees around. So we went up there and got out and walked around, hiked around. We had the intern with us, so he had a blast. He loves snow, and it's just funny because he gets high-centered all the time because his legs aren't long enough to keep him on top of the snow.
He needs bigger legs. He needs to upgrade.
Exactly. he's trying to snow wheel with 28-inch tires. So he's we got there, and we got out of the vehicle, and we're like, something, it smells like burnt wood. And I was like, I don't know, maybe they just had a fire up here? I mean, maybe... there was a fire and just the charred wood left over from fire, but I'd never heard about any fires in that area. So I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And so we're like, oh, whatever. We just kind of didn't think too much of it because it's snowing everywhere. So it's not really a fire danger or risk anymore up there. And we decided to just go hiking. We went down this little trail, and pretty soon we came to a place where there was a fire pit with smoldering fire still going underneath the snow and the dirt. Essentially, somebody had just kind of covered their fire pit, their coals and the hot embers with a little bit of dirt and then threw snow on it. And that was it. So that's where all of the smell of burnt wood and char was coming from. And I was like, you know, I get it. It's snowing. There's no risk of a fire spreading, but at least do a little bit to try and put your fires out and make sure that they're not continually smoldering. Like, if your fire is still smoldering, it is not out. So we grabbed a shovel and stirred that up and threw snow in it, stirred it and stowed and stirred it and snowed and stirred it. So, hopefully that thing, it was officially out and no longer smoldering when we left. And hopefully it stays that way. So, PSA again, as we're always harping, please just put out your fires. Doesn't matter. It's just a good habit to be in, and it makes all of us look really bad when Forest Service comes up on a fire that's not been put out. So,
I agree. Yeah. That's a bummer to hear. I wonder, you know, yeah, it's the situation for them probably was, you know, it's snowing. If it's underneath snow, it's not terribly hot. Mm-hmm. They probably just looked at it that way, which I can understand, but I do 100% agree. Like, just put it out. Like, it's not that much more work to put it out.
Yeah, you don't even have to use your own water to put it out. You just grab the snow around it, and all you got to do is stir it and dump snow in. Like, it would take you an extra 3 minutes of your time to put that out. So, and then the other thing I noticed, there was not as many, but it was also super fresh snow. But I did see a few tracks of, you know, people just going and digging down to the dirt and then just digging up the dirt as they're trying to go up hillsides. And, you know, as we're getting into the snow winter season, I'm just putting the request out there. Please be aware of how far you're digging down in the snow. A lot of trails get closed during snow season because people don't stay aware of how far they're digging down in the snow when they do get stuck. If you'd make it down to the earth, the ground, just stop, shovel yourself out, get a pole, get a winch, whatever it is. Don't rip up the ground underneath, because that's gonna, by doing that, you're just giving more ammo for those that are trying to shut down trails, more ammo to shut them down and keep them closed, during winter, when that's like, should be one of the safest times to go wheeling on these trails and minimize your environmental impact. But because we can't do it responsibly, you're just giving everybody and everybody out there more and more and more ammo to show that we as off-roaders, as a community, cannot be responsible and that we are quote-unquote dangerous and destructive, which is definitely not, I don't think that is the off-road community. I think that we can be. I think that there's a few bad apples out there that do that, but the more that we can be responsible and show that we are not dangerous and destructive, the more we get trusted with more public lands and trails staying open longer. So that's my other plea and request from my trip out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people take, you know, see snow season as one of those times when, oh, hey, we're allowed to go anywhere we want, right? Because it's not going to hurt the environment. It's not, you know, we're allowed to drive, air quotes here. Yeah. We're allowed to drive off trail because, you know, I'm not doing any damage. And the thing is, one, that's not true.
Yeah.
And two, if you are doing that and you're digging down into dirt, then you're doing just as much damage as if you were to drive off trail during, you know, the summer months. So, you know, just, you know, if you see somebody doing it, politely ask them to stop. If you guys are, you know, if you come upon those things, you know, it's a tough situation. I understand that. But, you know, we do need to self-regulate ourselves and, you know, control what's happening out there so we don't have more trails shutting down.
Yeah. The other big problem with going off trail in the wintertime is that typically as soon as one person makes tracks through snow, then it becomes infinitely easier for people to follow you, and people do. And so as soon as one person makes tracks off trail, more people start following those tracks. And
there's a track here.
Yeah. If it was just one person going off trail, yeah, you're probably not going to do any damage to the environment in the snow. But as soon as multiple people start going off trail, that snow underneath the track gets compacted more and more and more. And depending on the depth of the snow, there could be bushes, shrubbery. There could be animals under there hibernating within the bushes and shrubbery under the snow. There's a lot of different impacts that you could absolutely be destroying by having multiple vehicles going over tracks off trail. So just keep that in mind. Just kind of be respectful and think of being able to keep places open for those behind us that want to come through and enjoy the recreation. And for next year, when you want to go snow wheeling next year.
Yeah, good point. Two good PSAs there, Tyler.
Sorry, those are my rants for the day. Anyways, we got back in the car. We had lunch. We had a nice little picnic in the snow, and then we got back in. I was driving on the rest of the way down, and we get in, and I'm starting to, you know, drive and turn back out onto the road and get out and go, and my steering just felt really weird. Like, it was really, really loose, and then it would bind up for a second, maybe half a second, and then it would get loose again every time I tried to turn. And I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, I couldn't figure out what was going on. And I was like, this is not normal. It almost felt like I was running out of power steering fluid.
Oh, okay.
And that kind of binding where, like, it gets really hard to turn the wheel, but then it, like, it would unbind and all of a sudden get really easy. And I was like, what is going on? And so finally I pulled over and, to take a look at the steering, and the, my hydraulic ram was no longer attached to my tie rod.
What?
Yeah.
What happened?
So I use a clamp, right? I use one of those clamps that, attaches with a single shear bolt to the ram. And then that bolt goes through the top of the clamp. And then there's 8 bolts, smaller Allen head bolts that attaches the clamps to each other that grabs onto the tie rod, right?
Okay.
So those Allen head bolts, apparently some of them backed out and I sheared 3 of them.
Whoa.
So the single shear main bolt, the single shear main bolt that was attaching the hydraulic ram to the top of the clamp was still there. And the top of the clamp was still attached to the ram. But that was essentially, as I was turning, the ram was going and hitting my leaf springs. And then it would bind up there until it got enough pressure and the ram would pop up. And the clamp and the end of the ram would go above the leaf springs and go and do its thing.
Wow.
So okay. I was like, well, this is interesting. I don't have spares of those Allen head bolts. I could just... you know, zip tie the ram up out of the way so that is it's, you know, coming in and out of the ram is, you know, extending and retracting. It's not hitting things and binding up. And I'll just have right. regular power steering at that point, not hydraulic assist. And I was like, no, I can fix this. We can figure out a way to reattach this. This is a duct tape problem. So I started looking through my stuff and I was like, you know, everything's kind of wet. I don't want to just go and put a ton of duct tape all over everything because then that's going to leave a residue, a sticky residue on everything as well. And so I was like, what else do I have? I was like, man, too bad I don't have those like 300-pound test zip ties, the like really long ones you can get that are super thick. And I was like, oh, but I do have a bunch of the 120-pound ones. So
yes.
I took and because the what I did with the clamp, I've had issues with that clamp coming loose, the Allen head bolts backing out before and loosening up, and then the ram just kind of slides the clamp up and down my tie rod rather than moving the tie rod.
Yeah, and so I remember that.
What I did was I welded the bottom half of the clamp to the tie rod, just tack welded it on, so that was still secure. That was still attached to the tie rod.
Okay.
And so what I did was I lined up the top of the clamp to the bottom of the clamp and then put zip ties corner to corner around the single shear bolt and then around the bottom edge of the bottom clamp. And I did that on each side. So I just alternated sides so that the ram would be essentially attached to the bottom clamp, which was then attached to the tie rod.
Right. So you alternated back and forth, side to side, kind of weaving zip ties to hold that clamp or hold the bolt and top the clamp down.
Yes.
Got it.
So I was like, all right. So I ended up putting 6 of those zip ties on, figuring, okay, 6 zip ties, that's about 720 pounds of holding strength.
Yeah. Okay. That should be enough.
It should be enough. I was thinking this should be good. And it held and worked just fine. And then we got all the way down to where there was no more snow and it was raining on us, essentially. And there's a big parking lot down at the bottom and we pulled over to air up. And so I pulled into the parking lot and then I wanted to back into the parking space. And so as I, you know, I'm at 4 PSI on pavement.
Oh, sure.
As I was turning, just sitting there, turning the wheel to back into the parking space, it snapped all the zip ties like they were twigs. So while I was
nice
airing,
job.
Yeah, while I was airing up, I redid and put more zip ties on and put 10 on this time. So then I was up to 1,200 pounds.
Wow.
Of breaking strength of the zip ties. And I was like, all right, so with, 30 PSI in the tires and a 1,200 pounds should hold it if 600 pounds or 700 pounds was holding just fine with 4 PSI, 1,200 should hold with 30 PSI to get us home. And it did held just fine all the way home.
Nice.
So I thought that was a fun a fix to get home.
It, I saw your Instagram photo and it sure looks funny. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So I also loved how in a group chat you blamed it on me. You blamed it on my rig.
I didn't blame it on your rig. I just said that your rig was the one that broke down that I put the zip ties on.
That's right. The question was, whose rig is that? And you're like, Bobcat?
Bobcat? Question mark? Yeah. So, it was fun. I thought that was entertaining and that it actually worked to get home attaching a hydraulic ram to your tie rod using nothing but zip ties.
Yeah, so, that was impressive.
Mm-hmm. So that was fun. We did that and had a good day. We got home by like 1 p.m., 2 p.m. maybe, something like that. So we just relaxed the rest of the day and had a good time. Big things that I took away from the trip, because this is kind of like the first trip since I've quote unquote had Kermit done. So he has lockers. He has everything working. I did not hook up the winch though before going.
Okay.
And,
You didn't need it.
We didn't need it. I knew that there was very little snow and I was counting on, staying on the main road and not going exploring down the side forest roads that are still open during the seasonal closures. I think technically we still have like 2 weeks before seasonal closures go in effect, but, I was like, we're not going to go exploring because it's just us. We don't have another rig with us. And so I was like, I'm not going to hook up the winch. And that's mainly because, Frank, shout out, not Florida Frank, Frank A on Instagram. He's a listener. He got in contact with me and said, hey, it sounds like from everything I've been listening to the podcast that you're looking for this item here for your winch. And he linked it and it's essentially a solenoid. It's a 300-400 amp, maybe more a solenoid from Warn.
Oh, that's cool.
Essentially what it is it's just a really, really big relay.
Which is
exactly what I was looking for.
Is it a huge flip the switch breaker thing that you were talking about?
It behaves the same way, except you can flip the switch remotely.
Oh.
That's what's nice about...
That's boring.
I mean, that's what... yeah. No, that's what relays are, right? They're a switch that's controlled by another switch.
Right.
So you can... and it's just this giant solenoid. And I was like, oh my God, I've known that these exist. I just didn't think of using it for this purpose, but that's exactly what they're used for. And so you can put it in and put the solenoid up under the rear cargo area near the batteries. So it's close to the batteries as possible. And then you just run a tiny, tiny, you know, 18 gauge, 19, 20 gauge, power line, into the cab on it. So you can control when that solenoid connects the power to the winch. And so you have all the power of the winch and that whole line on those zero gauge cables that I have running disconnected all the time. And then I have this tiny, tiny little control power line going into the cab to connect the winch power when I need it connected. Otherwise, it stays disconnected all the time. I don't have to worry about shorts.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks,
Frank.
Yeah. Big shout out to Frank for giving me the idea for that. And I was like, oh my God, that's perfect. That I was looking for a relay, but like I couldn't find any relays that could do that much power and realized, right. Oh my God, yeah, I just need a giant solenoid. That's all the relays are really. So.
Yeah. Well, and it's good to know. And I mean, and now, you know, hopefully we're sharing that knowledge for other people as well that, you know, this is a great option for you when you're connecting your winches.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, it should work out really well. I'm still waiting for the solenoid to show up, but once it shows up, I already have a switch and the wiring for the switch set up in the cab of the Kermit. So, I'll be using one of those and I just have to run the wiring down to the solenoid in the back and hook everything up and I should be finished. Kermit should be complete, finished, ready to go.
That's good news.
Yeah. And then
it's about freaking time.
I know, right? Some other fun news. While I was out, I realized that I need a bigger alternator. My alternator is not able to keep both batteries charged at full voltage. So it's just, it's not putting out enough amps to cover all the electrical accessories I have. And now the dual battery setup, because when the rig is off, you know, I pull power from the accessory battery. And so when the rig turns back on, the alternator is just always running high amps. It's always running full voltage, high amps, which is, will wear out your alternator. But also what happens is if your batteries don't always get charged at, you know, a good 14.7, 14.5 volts, you can wear down your batteries very quickly. And so right now my alternator, just because it's working so hard, it's only really charging stuff at like 13.8 to 14.3 volts. And so I need a bigger alternator. But the good news is I ordered a Premier Power Welder.
How does that help with your alternator?
Because those come with 165 amp alternators.
Oh, I thought you had to get another alternator with that. Okay, that's cool. So it comes with an alternator for you when you order the power welder. That's, I didn't know about that. Thought you had to supply that yourself, but that works. So you got the alternator already.
I do. The alternator is sitting in the garage, and I think what I'm going to end up doing is a buddy of mine, John Allen from the Mad Hatters, he is a huge Premier power welder guy, right? He does a ton of welding on the trail, and he does it all with his Premier. And he ends up, because of all the welding he does on the trail and everything, he actually works quite closely with Greg, the owner of Premier, in getting other people hooked up with Premier welders. So,
nice.
John, actually, if you go and if you ever order a Premier power welder and order one for the 22RE engine, John actually wrote the install manual for Premier for that engine.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, John, because he wrote that one, I believe he also, if you get a Premier welder for the 3.0 Toyota engine, he, I believe, wrote that one as well. So now John's kind of like, oh, it's a matter of pride. I want to write the install manual for the 3.4 as well. So
funny.
I'm going to take
and
Kermit.
That works out well.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to take Kermit over to John's, and we're going to do the install on the Premier, and he's going to essentially write the install manual for a Premier power welder for the 3.4 Toyota engine and hand that off to Greg. But I think what I'm going to end up doing is installing the 165 amp alternator before I do that, and take it over to John, because I need to get that bigger alternator in the rig as soon as possible before I just destroy my batteries.
Sure. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it depends on how soon and when. You know, if you're just doing a trip down to him and you charge your batteries ahead of schedule, then you're probably going to be okay. But if you're going to, if you and John are going to meet later this season, then yeah, you should figure that out.
Yep. So that was my weekend. That's everything I did. I'm really, really happy with the way Kermit is working. He did amazing getting to and from the trails. He did awesome in the snow. I know that from using him and running him in the snow right now, he's going to do awesome in really, really deep snow once we get there. So I'm really excited to get more snow up in the Sierras and do more of my snow wheeling. Which is what I absolutely love. That's what I live for. So, I'm excited for what winter's going to bring here, and I'm really happy to have Kermit up and running and, seeing how well he's working for, just this simple little trip here, kind of a test run for him. So
cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's good news. Yeah. I think we're all excited to hear what you think of the engine, you know, once you get into the snow season, because of how much you love it.
Yeah.
So that's good news. I have one more little thing if you've wrapped it up, or do you have something else?
I am all good. That's all I got updates for.
All right. I just wanted to, you know, I was doing the Gearidge Bolt Biter giveaway on Instagram. I did a review video of it. And that's one of the ones I wrote a blog for. And I did, put it up on Instagram as like my 10,000, cause I passed 10,000 subscribers on Instagram.
I saw that. Thanks, fans. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And so I did this giveaway, with
you
Gear Wrench.
You magnificent bastard. I salute you.
Wow. I got them all.
Yes.
And so we had a winner.
Winner.
And our winner was...
Winner, winner.
Actually, what?
Winner, winner.
Winner, winner. We had a winner, which was Kevin Poole, one of our patrons.
No way.
Yeah. Which was awesome.
That's really cool.
He also bought a one of the gift boxes.
Nice.
And so sort of bummed that I had to send two shipments to him, right? Like back to back. But yeah. And it was like, I sent it out Monday morning. I shipped out the gift box, and then Monday, like at 10 o'clock, he won the giveaway. I was like, dang it. I should have saved him.
That's what you get for being an overachiever and getting things out on time.
I know. I should procrastinate more.
Yeah.
Anyways, congratulations, Kevin. You're going to enjoy them. They're a really cool product, and definitely a good thing to have out on the trail and at your workspace or in your new trailer that you're building that I was spying on your Instagram about.
Stalker. Creepy.
Whoop, whoop.
Oh, cool. You could be in a freak show.
Anyways. Nice. Congrats, Kevin. That's really cool. I'm always excited when the patrons win stuff that we do. So
definitely. I think that we haven't heard anything in regards to the Gear Wrench Garage giveaway, whether they've chose a winner yet or not. And we are holding off on our end until they get a winner. We have ours picked and the runner-up picked, I believe. And so we are waiting just for them to make the announcement, and then we will make our announcement to follow.
Yeah. So if anybody has an extra $100, we might move you up in the rankings, just FYI.
I have an extra $100 then.
To move you up in the rankings?
Yeah. From zero to something.
Mm-hmm. I will say, after watching all of the video submissions, huge shout out to everybody that mentioned Snail Trail 4x4 or Jimmy and Tyler in their video submissions for the Gear Wrench Ultimate Garage giveaway. There was a lot of you out there that didn't mention it at all. And I'm a little like, I'm going to be talking to a few of you, but, those of you that did, you got some extra bonus points. So we'll just, put it that way. So thank you for that.
Are we waiting to do the announcement before we talk about how we did the judging?
Yes, I think that we should tell everybody the criteria we used for the judging when we do the announcement. And so we'll talk about how that whole process worked and how we came to our decision, our conclusion whenever we announce our winner. So we're just essentially waiting on Gear Wrench to announce theirs to begin with, to start off.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, cool. Did you have anything else for everybody?
That's all I have on my list.
Awesome. How can people get a hold of us if they want to give us some updates or give us some feedback on this episode or previous episodes or talk a little bit more about snow wheeling? I did have a couple listeners reach out to me on Instagram and say that they've never been snow wheeling before, and they're a group of JKs on 35s with lockers, and that they'd like to, quote-unquote, get their feet wet, pun intended, and start doing some snow wheeling this year. So I told them 100%, once I'm clear of my bubble boy stint here, I'm totally going to go up with them and take them snow wheeling. So if people, I'm not saying that I'm going to do that for everybody. It's totally going to be dependent on my schedule, but I absolutely love snow wheeling and snow wheeling with people that have never been snow wheeling before, to show you guys the fun that it can be rather than the extreme frustration that can also come out of snow wheeling. So how can people do that?
Well, you can find me over at jimmy@snailtrail4x4.com. You can find Tyler at tyler@snailtrail4x4.com. You can hit me up on Instagram, snailtrail4x4. Tyler on Instagram's 4x4 Toyota Tyler. You can find him over at Morphlate as well. You can find me over at Snail Armor. You can hit us up. You can write a comment on the website. Am I missing any?
I think that's about it. That's a good reach of
that's enough.
How to find us. Yeah. you can do one of those and you find us. So we'll be good.
I do kind of have a hidden email, in regards to Snail Trail 4x4. Mm-hmm. And somebody wrote me on it the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I'm like, how'd you find this email? Like, it's sort of one of, it's a hierarchy email that I use to, you know, I have like Jimmy at snailtrail4x4, and then I have this hierarchy email that is sort of a blanket for some accounts.
Okay.
That I use it instead of Jimmy at snailtrail4x4, so it's a little bit more private and a little bit more locked down. And somebody wrote an email into that account, and I'm like, I don't publish this one at all. I don't say it anywhere. How'd you find it? And he's like, oh, I just kind of guessed. I didn't really know what your guys' email address was, and
oh, interesting.
I just typed this in, and you know, you got it. I'm like, wow, okay.
Interesting. Okay. Well, so, that's fun. Good, smart people we got out there. Cool. I also wanted to give an update on the we had an Easter egg hunt not too long ago. So we've been collecting those for those who know what the Easter egg hunt is. If you don't know, then you don't know. I'm sorry. If you know, you know. And we've been collecting those Easter eggs responses, and we'll be getting those out probably at the end of this year after the holiday season's over. So just giving you guys a heads up, you haven't received it yet because we haven't put them out yet. We're just kind of waiting for more responses to come in so that we can kind of get a bunch of them done all at one time. So that's the update for Easter eggs.
Bat shipping.
Not bat shipping. Batch shipping.
Yeah, not bat shitting.
Yeah, not bat shitting. That'd be bad. So yeah, I think that's about it. Do you have any final words for everyone out there?
Snow season.
And with that, my friends, keep crawling.
Why does Santa have three gardens?
So he can ho, ho, ho? Or one for each of his hoes? One for each of his hoes?
There you go.
That's funny.